From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt. Noel is on an adventure.
But we'll be returning soon. They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul, Mission Control Deck, and most importantly, you are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. Before we dive into today's show, which is pretty interesting, and actually one of those mysteries that we do have an answer for, we want to give you a quick update on some stuff we learned about COVID-19, the novel coronavirus, which is currently sweeping the globe at a pace comparable to K-pop, but much more deadly.
Yeah, that's right. And many of you know we are in Atlanta, Georgia, where we record this. And this is one of the places, specifically Fulton County, one of the major counties within the greater metropolitan area here in Atlanta. It is experiencing a bit of an outbreak, including within the public school system.
Right. As we were walking in to record today, just this afternoon, I had learned that Fulton County school systems are closing for now just to sanitize the area. That's the official line. No one knows how long they'll be closed for, but they're doing so because an employee was recently confirmed to have coronavirus. At this point, the U.S. still lags behind other countries in terms of testing. Many people, including Vice Reporter and myself, have been surprised going back through U.S. Customs to find that they just let you in. Other countries, by the way, are having much more extensive testing. Some countries have mandatory 14-day quarantines, which probably still isn't long enough. So we want to hear from you. What's happening COVID-wise in your neck of the woods?
And I don't want to, tell anyone's business here, but Mission Control, weren't you about to head over to Italy? Are you still going? Okay, no, he is not. Okay, that makes me feel a little safer.
Yeah, well, Italy is actually their death tolls. Their death toll increased by 133 people today.
Yes.
It's March 9th as we record this, and around the world, we're seeing countries take different approaches. And many countries are getting in front of it. They're sacrificing, bad press, or they're taking the hit with bad press to look overly prepared or pessimistic or pragmatic.
Let's go that route every time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, Matt, I'm not going to name names, but there were a couple of people who yet again implied that I was being paranoid or overthinking it to revamp my bug out bag, but that's just what I do when I get a new vehicle.
Dude, if anyone throws shade at your bug out bag, no matter who you are out there or within this room, that person's not your real friend.
See, I'm not, I'm like very, I'm very Boy Scout about it.
Yeah.
My bug out bag doesn't have, one, anything illegal in it, and two, I'm still on the fence about this, but it doesn't have a lot of the heavy stuff that other people – mine is like you're stranded in the middle of nowhere, your car breaks down or something, and you need to be alive for 72 hours. I don't think that's crazy.
That's not crazy at all. That's my entire trunk space in my vehicle right now is, did something go wrong? Open the trunk.
That's great. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I was talking with a friend of mine who remained nameless this weekend, and when I just got back, and he was telling me about a kit he has for gunshot wounds to stitch himself up, and I thought,
really, Corey?
It's not. That's funny. No. But we'd like to also hear what you're doing in reaction to this in your neck of the global woods. Do you feel like this is alarmism? Do you feel like people are not making a big enough deal? Did you already have a bug out bag? I hope you already we hope you already washed your hands normally.
Yeah.
That's one of the weird things.
You know, I did not apply antibacterial before coming into this room, though.
I did, yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, I didn't.
I went home. I showered. I just covered myself in hand sanitizer like Danny DeVito's character in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And just slopped it on. The maintenance people came over, and, you know, it would have been weird a few weeks ago, but now they were like, we get it.
Yeah, as long as you didn't climb into a leather couch, you know what I mean?
No, not quarantine yet.
I swear this is the last thing.
Yeah.
We were having this internal discussion here just about these microphone covers that Ben and I are talking into right now. They're these removable, just black mesh microphone covers. Mm. And so many people use these studios now throughout the day and just talk right here in close proximity to these things. If any of us get sick, it will be the on-air talent.
So I will note, Matt, since our fellow listeners can't see the studio right now, unless we take some more pictures of it or something, you and I, and Mission Control as well, we keep our mouths relatively far away from the mic in comparison to some other people.
Yeah.
And I just keep getting further and further away.
Are you guys okay with me sounding like this the whole episode? What do you think? Is that bad for business, Paul? Yeah. Okay. All right.
All right. So before the world burns down, and while we're waiting for your questions, you're probably saying, okay, I want to tell you about my bug out bag, or I want to tell you why, Ben, you're being crazy, or I want to tell you I want to know more about what's in your trunk, Matt. Whatever you're saying, you're probably thinking, how do I communicate with you guys directly? Well, you can find us in a number of places. We're just – the internet is riddled with us. One thing that we've started to do is to give some Twitter shout-outs, because Twitter is, you know, at its worst, it is a cesspool of misinformation, and at its best, it can help you get around things like state censorship or mainstream media censorship. It's like fire. It's an invaluable tool for the villains and the heroes.
That's right.
Throughout mythology, which will come into play later.
That's right.
So, I don't know, Matt, you got a Twitter shout out you want to kick off?
I do. I want to give a big shout out to Jeff, who made a video message and sent it to us. And he is only wearing a hoodie because he's at a swim function and it's cold. But yeah, he sent us a message about a company that he wants us to look into. Mm-hmm. And we've already done some initial searching around about it. So thanks for sending that to us, Jeff.
No spoilers, huh?
No spoilers.
Or you can see what Jeff's talking about on Twitter, right?
Yes, you can.
If you follow us at Conspiracy Stuff, spelled like it sounds on Twitter. I also want to give a shout out to Sarah at Sarah Allen, who said, I love that you all covered the Jeff Davis 8 on your last episode. One point of contention, Frankie Richard's name is pronounced Richard, not Richard.
Yeah.
And that's – we appreciate that correction. You know, proper nouns can always be a little bit tricky. We also appreciate everybody who wrote in regarding the Jennings 8 podcast. We think it's an important story, and it is a mystery that is yet to be solved. So without further ado, on to today's episode. This is a weird one. It's one we heard about a while back, but still pretty recently when you look at the span of time as a whole. But I guess everything – humans are pretty recent if you look at the span of time as a whole. Earth is sort of a fad.
We're the new thing.
We're the new thing. Let's hope we stick around. Oh, my God. What are we going to do?
Hey, we had a good run. Let's look back while we can.
There we go. It reminds me of an old joke in Spanish. Doesn't really translate to English, but –
I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, but keep that in mind. No, it's about like what do you do if you're hanging on a cliff and like there's a strawberry bush and it's the only thing that's keeping you, but you see the roots pulling out of the cliff. Anyway, the punchline is when they're like, what do you do? The punchline is you eat the strawberries.
That's pretty good.
It's It's funnier in the original language. All right, but you're right, Matt. Humanity. Let's look back while we can. The more we learn about early humanity, the stranger our collective story becomes, right? We know still that the general pattern of human migration from the African continent throughout the rest of the world still seems correct, still seems legit. There are tons of things that appear to confirm this. However, recent research has revealed there is an entire mass, there's a volume of other chapters that we're missing from the broad strokes of that story. We know now that a lot of stuff that sounded crazy or kooky back when many of us listening were children, a lot of that stuff has been proven. We know that our ancestors, or if you're Homo sapien, your ancestors met, mingled, and may have interbred with multiple other hominids, sort of the early mixtapes of what would become humanity. Things like Neanderthals, Denisovans were a recent discovery, Homo floresiensis, the so-called hobbits. And as a matter of fact, I've got to say, there was another kind of smaller early human-like species discovered in the Philippines as well. And
Really recently.
Yeah, and really recently, there appears to be maybe another ghost in the genetic code. In February 12th, 2020, we found reports that some West Africans may have genes from an ancient, what people are calling ghost hominid. And they found this through genetic research, and they've learned what the DNA from this as of yet unidentified hominin does. It involves tumor suppression and regulation of hormones. All to say that we are very much still in the early days of understanding exactly where we came from.
I'm just going to go ahead and say this, Ben, that ghost DNA, come on, we all know what that is.
Oh, yeah?
That's extraterrestrial.
Old Graham Hancock?
Yeah,
here?
Dude. Come on. Chariots.
I want it to be true so ardently, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, and here's the other thing, just when we're talking about this kind of stuff, if you're a subscriber to the theory, we will say it is a theory of evolution in the way that, all or most of science believes.
In the way like gravity is a theory?
Yes.
Okay.
well, you realize that there are a ton of experimentations and combinations that occurred through DNA where different things were produced than what we understand as the model, let's say, Homo sapien, right?
Uh-huh.
So many varying things must have been produced. That's just the way it functions. And we maybe forget sometimes that just because you don't have a specific skeleton of a large group of hominins, like a Denisovan or something, doesn't mean that there aren't jumps in between there or versions of a hominin that is a Denisovan slash whatever. I'm just going to use Neanderthal as an example, but
sure.
I don't know if the timelines match. I just mean just because you don't find a bunch of those bones somewhere doesn't mean they didn't exist.
Oh, yeah.
It's a big stew.
A gumbo, if you will.
It's a gumbo of humanoid DNA, of hominid DNA. And that's, just remember that as we continue throughout today's episode.
Genetic gumbo. I love it. So that the most recent discovery, just to put that in perspective, if you're listening to this when it comes out, like last month, we found evidence of another early thing that was very much like us, such that our ancestors could interbreed with it, meaning that whatever this ghost in the genetic machine is, it is also part of us. And some of us listening today are, in a very real sense then, part ghost until we identify it. If you have Yoruba or Mende ancestry, then you have 2 to 19% of genetic material from this mysterious population.
Yeah, and we don't know what it is. It's a, quote, missing link right now between, wherever that genetic population was.
Right, and we're not saying it's anything crazy. We're just we don't know.
We just don't know yet.
Yeah, so this is where we're at. There is a fascinating argument to be made that, Matt, I know you and I have both gone back and forth over in the years between – it's about the relationship between folklore and fact. Could all these recollections of those ancient encounters have survived somehow through probably oral storytelling, right, before the written word? And could they have inspired those age-old legends of meeting sentient – not quite human creatures, like things we think of as like trolls or elves, goblins, dwarves, and so on. Could it happen?
Maybe.
Maybe. That's the thing. It's fascinating. There's no proof of this yet, and it would be very, very difficult to prove. But still, that concept has encouraged conjecture, not just about the greatest hits of supernatural sentient beings that we named right now, but other stuff, other creatures that were thought to be sentient that have been largely relegated to the land of legend and myth, namely giants.
Giants.
Yep. This is what's that old ominous biblical quote? There were giants in those days, you know?
Oh, yeah. I was thinking more of fee, fi, fo, fum.
Oh, yeah.
But that's a good one too.
Grind the bones to make our bread. Yeah. Giants and cannibalism, closely related.
Yeah.
Throughout world folklore.
Hey, Ben, what do you say we take a quick break and then get to the facts?
Absolutely. Here are the facts. In several episodes, we have examined the concept of ancient giants before. So for a full dive into this, do check out those earlier episodes. One specific one would be the legend of the Siteca, which is a Native American legend. No spoilers, but it's worth your time.
Oh, it definitely is. And also, just to set this up front as well, you may have at some point on a social media channel found images of giant skeletal remains. Mm-hmm. Just in our researching for the Siteca episode and a couple other past episodes, many of those, if not all of them, are photoshopped and are bogus. Mm-hmm. Just putting that out there. There are, however, reports coming out that we're going to talk about today of real discoveries mm-hmm. that are out of the ordinary when you're talking about the size of a skeleton.
So yes. So let's also point out that not all of those photos are necessarily modern hoaxes, right?
Absolutely.
Like it's gone back. Shroud of Turin style.
Well, yeah, hundreds of years this kind of thing has been – touted by, I don't want to use the word charlatans, by people who are just trying to bilk you for some money.
Right. Yeah. And so we'll get this out of the way. This is the factual part of the show.
Yeah.
Right. So this is where we have to be the paleontological party poopers just for a bit. Long story short, in most of the episodes we've done regarding what we would call giants, we found that the concept of giants or the stories or the legends, the allegations can be attributed to some pretty mundane causes. And we wanted to dive into one fascinating example, tantalizing, I would say, because we can't quite prove it. You know what I mean? Like you can't get 100% there, but we're about 98% sure that this adds up. This is a true story.
Well, yeah. If you think about stumbling across the remains of some creature that is unknown to you, that looks very different, is pretty strange, you look at those bones and you think, well, wow, that looks kind of like a leg bone or an arm bone. And then what is this skull? What on earth is this? And what we're going to talk about right now is an example of finding a strange skull and maybe misattributing it to being some kind of humanoid creature.
Right. Yeah. Yep. We've misidentified bones from other animals. And what's fascinating here is that in 2003, a geologist with the University of Crete's Natural History Museum named Charalampos Fasoulas, he noted that Greece and the Aegean were once upon a time, millions and millions of years ago, home to something called Deinotherium giganteum. The ballpark translation for this, by the way, is huge, terrible beast.
Yes.
So this thing, from what you understand now, again, it's millions of years ago, 8 or 9 million years. It was a distant relative to the modern elephant, but it was gigantic. It was 4.6 meters tall or 15 feet tall, and it had these huge tusks. It was one of the largest mammals to ever stroll around this fine planet of ours. And ancient people in that area, millions and millions of years later, were almost certain to have encountered at some point fossils of these creatures. And since those people were very much like people of today, they did just what you're describing, Matt. They said, okay, let's wrap our heads around this. What is this thing? All right, this is a leg bone. This is huge. Whatever this thing was, this is huge. And
we're talking about Greece.
Very
the Aegean Peninsula and all of this.
Yeah. Very, very smart culture in many ways. And they tried to explain it through the lenses of their current understanding.
Yes, through, in this case, Greek and Roman mythology. And there's an author named Adrienne Mayer, and she argues that both of these groups, Greeks and Romans, that they saw this as possibly evidence of some of the mythological creatures that were pre-existing. And she wrote about this in her book called The First Fossil Hunters, Paleontology in Greek and Roman Times.
Yeah. So we know this was a common thing, not just in Greco-Roman times and not just in that part of the world, but in any part of the world. Whenever humans find stuff, we are explainers, we are classifiers. We want to be the smart ones in the room.
Essentially, there's this ancient story, this myth about this creature, and now we found this real fossil. Well, let's connect those things together.
Right, through the lens of our understanding, because we have to realize that mythology, what we call mythology now, was a very real way of looking at the world, and it explained a lot of stuff. And plus, added benefit, a lot of mythology is inextricably intertwined with predictions of the movements of the heavens. So this stuff seems real, right?
Yeah.
So there's an archaeologist named Thomas Strasser who agrees with Adrienne Mayer's writing. And he said specifically, you'll never be able to test this idea in a scientific fashion, but the ancient Greeks were farmers and they would certainly have come across fossil bones like this from this huge, terrible huge beast. Mm-hmm. And they would try to explain them, and they didn't have a concept of the theory of evolution. So it makes sense to this archaeologist that they would reconstruct them in their minds as things like giants, monsters, sphinxes, and so on. And Matt, I know you're dying to, for anyone who hasn't heard us telegraphing this like for minutes now, what was the money on? What did these people think the Deinotherium giganteum was?
Well, if you've never seen a Deinotherium giganteum skull, I recommend, if you can, search for it right now before I spoil it for you. Okay, hopefully you're not driving, or if you're in a Tesla, like do the old vocal command thing or whatever. I don't know how new cars work. A cyclops. And that might be a little bit surprising. Wait, you're saying it's an elephant-like creature, right?
Those have two eyes.
Yeah, and they do have two eyes. But what they also have, if you're just looking at the bones, the skull, is a giant, giant centered nasal passage.
Right. And these skulls clearly differ from the skulls of modern Asian or African elephants. That nasal passage is huge. Mm-hmm. And it does kind of look like where you would put a monstrous eye, especially if you thought maybe where the actual eye holes are ear holes. Eye holes, eye sockets, sorry.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Dude, you're right. The eye sockets really do look like it would be where the ears are.
Because they're separated sort of the way bird eye sockets are separated on the sides of the face. Anyhow, yeah, so the cyclops, we can't prove it 100%, but we're pretty sure it was the misidentified skull of this monster elephant. And the monster elephant itself is scary enough, right?
Yeah.
So it's so cool. I wonder if it was as intelligent as elephants are today. You know?
It was at least the the precursor. You can totally, oh, wow, it's creepy looking.
It's a bruiser. Those tusks are weird.
Yeah, man, it could wreck somebody with those tusks.
So a lot of monsters in folklore, as irritating as it is to say it, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them were the result of misidentified fossils or things we attempted as a species to explain. Second, and going to your earlier point, Matt, about Photoshop, one mundane explanation for giants in general is unethical reporting from muckraking newspapers and other media going back a long time and also going forward a long time, pretty recently. Like here in the United States, you know, you've probably heard tell, as we would say in Tennessee, even if you're not from the U.S., you've heard stories about the late 19th century and early 20th century discoveries, you know, the 1800s discoveries where there would be a reporter with a breathless claim that somewhere out there in the desert, in the lawless lands that were not quite states, someone had found bizarre, huge skeletons. They're tied into the myth of the American West, right? The pre-European existence. So far, none of those claims have been proven if you're talking about like a 20-foot tall giant, right?
Yeah. And again, you've probably seen those images. Again, they are convincing but faked. And well, here's the other thing we noticed when we were talking about this previously on these episodes. There are a ton of people out there who believe the storyline that someone somewhere, either at the Smithsonian or the Natural History Museum or some other organization.
The Vatican. I mean, just roll out the red carpet.
Well, yeah. That these bones were recovered, these ancient remains were recovered and sent off to one of these institutions, and then that institution is then hiding it from the public.
Right, right. And the big question there would be motive. Why would they do that? Even if it were plausible for that to happen. And it's possible, I guess. Technically, it's possible. But again, then it's a big leap from possible to plausible. So why would they do it? That's the piece of the puzzle that we have to solve if we want to engage with that theory.
And what you'll hear is that it's to hide the true nature of humanity.
Right, right. And this ties in a little bit with some cryptozoologists will argue something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But not on air.
Huh? What do you mean?
But not on air. Anyhow, so – and we'll get back to that later on in today's show. Just to hold it in your head, bracket. I mean, don't tattoo yourself with that, but you know, remember it for the next few minutes. So we know with the notable exception of the Sitteh Ka, a lot of those things turn out to be legends or hoaxes. And then, of course, there is the third common cause that we have found, and it's a personal one for a lot of people. And therefore, it being a personal one is something that it's personal in a way that I don't think other people should intrude upon. By which I mean some accounts of giants come from ancient religious sources or text, and this can lead modern adherents of these sources or text or belief systems to accept those stories because they're part of the faith system or the belief system that they have, you know, especially when you get to people who have literal interpretations of things rather than metaphorical or figurative. This means that in order to practice their belief system, they have to believe everything that is involved, right? One example of having to accept everything, all part and parcel mm-hmm. of a belief system, would be something like the belief in jinn for many people who consider themselves, you know, astute and committed followers of the belief system with jinn, like of Islam. There are people who say, well, you have to believe in jinn because it's in the Quran, you know. And by far one of the coolest, in my opinion, appearances in the Quran, you know. These creatures of smokeless fire, you know.
Yeah, dude. It's incredible.
And you have a podcast – you've been involved with a podcast about that, right?
You almost set it up perfectly because it's a show all about Jin. And I think people will be very surprised by this show. And it's not out yet, Ben, but it will be out at some point this year.
Ah, okay. That's one of your shows I'm personally very excited for.
Me too.
So there we have it. And additionally, when we encounter the world of faith and religion, there could be a situation in which giants are ascribed some sort of supernatural power, whether just because of their descent from a divine or otherwise supernatural being, or because it's just part of the other thing that makes them not quite human, right? And if they're supernatural, then that means, logically, that natural rules don't apply to them. So why would you try to codify these things in human terms, right? If they are agents of the infernal or agents of the divine. So there you have it. Those are three reasons. We've done several episodes on this. We found three reasons: misidentification, purposeful hoaxes, religious accounts.
We didn't even bring up Nephilim, but
we didn't even bring not yet. Yeah.
Okay.
and we talk about that in an earlier episode. So this may leave a lot of us and our fellow listeners going, oh, bummer. So all these giant myths are bogus.
I'm turning this episode off.
The big secret. The giant secret about giants is it's a giant hoax. You guys are terrible.
Everything is terrible. I'm going to throw my phone. I'm going to place it on the ground and just be upset about it.
And wait for the COVID. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Don't worry. We didn't say that yet. We did not say that these are all bogus. What are we talking about? I'll tell you after a word from our sponsor. Here's where it gets crazy.
Well, guess what? We've got breaking news for you. It appears that there are ancient giants, at least in China.
Right? It's crazy. We say breaking news, we mean back in July of 2017. And we spent some time tracing down this story. We can verify this story, but we'll get into it. Anyway, July 2017, not too long ago, right? The story came to us from China's Xinhua news agency, and they reported that these archaeologists had discovered the remains of a 5,000-year-old community in eastern China. And the members of this community, we have the bones, we have the proof. It didn't disappear. The Smithsonian doesn't have it yet or whatever. These people appeared to be
giants.
Giants.
They were described as giants.
They were described as giants. Giants.
Yes. So we look to Feng Hui, who is the head of the Shandong University School of History and Culture. And if you look through the reporting, we talk about tracing this story because you will find it in like 30 different publications, English written publications. That's pretty much the same story, just kind of copied over.
Right. So we went to the primary sources.
Yes, exactly. We got to the original one. So Feng Hui describes how since 2016, the group of archaeologists have been excavating the ruins of 104 houses, 205 graves, and 20 sacrificial pits in this village that, Ben, I'm going to let you pronounce.
Butcher? I'll
no,
butcher
come
it.
On. You at least kind
I'll butcher
of.
It. No, no. I don't know the tones. Zhao Jia? I don't know.
That
Zhao
sounds
Jia?
Way better than what I would say. Zhao Jia?
Mandarin speakers are going to punish us, and rightly so. Let us know how to pronounce it. You can find us on Twitter.
And I would say Zheng Kui or Zheng...
Zhongqi?
Zhongqiu. Zhongqiu district.
Yeah. And that's near the capital of Shandong. These relics are from something... A Neolithic era in a community called the Longshan culture. And it's in the middle, kind of lower reaches of the Yellow River. And they named the culture after a nearby mountain, Mount Longshan. This area, as far as we can tell, was a cultural powerhouse. It was a center of politics, economy, and of course, politics and economy closely related with religions at this time. Arguably, still today, closely related with religions. So They also found ruins of ditches, clay embankments. They found tons of accoutrements and, status symbols, jade pottery, all the hits. And since this was a cultural center, these people here, again described as giants, lived pretty well. They had separate bedrooms and kitchens. We know that they had a solid diet, too, pretty consistently, which was super important to this story.
Yeah, you're eating millet. Was their primary grain there. They're also eating some pork, some pigs. Some cases, there are also these giant graves where pig bones and pig teeth were found. And let's talk just quickly about the archaeologist and this job and putting together, you know, the ideas here. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, the ruins that we found are definitely places, houses that had separate bedrooms. And we know that because of the way they were set up. That to me is almost magic, being able to see with a lens, like having such a deep understanding of the history of archaeology, the history of humanity, to be able to look at something like that and figure that stuff out and put together those pieces of, oh, there's millet in this layer of the soil where all of this other stuff is preserved. There's a lot of millet here and there's all these pig bones. Like we can kind of see what these people lived like.
Right, right. And a lot of work goes into it. It's a very difficult process.
Yeah.
At the end of this episode, I am going to make maybe a somewhat controversial argument. Maybe a thought experiment, but
okay.
Archaeologists are working diligently around the world and around the clock, and they are discovering things and having to prove them, you know, seven ways to sundown, six ways to Sunday, whatever you want to say. So this discovery is amazing for these archaeologists. It is a motherlode, is a watershed moment. It fills in what has been described as a cultural blank from about 4,500 to 5,000 years ago. So for about 500 years, there are these giants. At least 500 years. You know, the math gets sketchy and fuzzy the further back. Now, here is the part most of us have been waiting for. The big question, the Deinotherium gigantium in the room, if you will, just how big were these people? I mean, Matt, if we genuinely do have physical evidence of real-life giants, what exactly do we mean when we say giant?
Oh, buddy, let me tell you. Are you ready for this?
Let me scoot to the edge.
Yeah.
See. All right.
Hold on. Hold on to something.
Okay.
Here it goes. They were between 1.8 meters and 2 meters tall. So
can you America that for me real quick?
Sure. Let's see. 1 meter is around 3 feet. Yeah?
Okay.
So that would be 5'9"-ish? 5'11 to 6'2", maybe? 6'6", if we're reaching?
6'6" on the outside, right?
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, that's a little bit of a letdown. Have we taken our fellow conspiracy realist on a bit of a shaggy dog story?
Well, I mean, you know, dogs are great.
Yes. So the answer is yes. They found that height is weird. We'll get to it. Taller men were found buried in larger graves, and this could be due to them having a higher status. Sociopolitically, it could also be due to them having access to better food. We know there was a lot of infighting. There's sacrificial pits. There are people who have clearly died by violence in such a violent way that you can tell just by looking at their bones. You don't even need the rest of the body. Someone mopped them in an aggressively brutal way. So this height is noteworthy at the higher end. In most parts of the world, right. In our previous episode, we said, you know, the shortest average height will tend to be women in the Philippines. The tallest average height is going to tend to be males in certain Northern European countries. Still, for most people, if you see someone who's 6 feet, 6 inches tall, you're going to think, well, that's noteworthy, but that's not the tallest person I've ever heard of. And it's probably not even the tallest person I've ever seen, especially if I have a television. Like, just to kick the stats today, the average height of a professional basketball player in the United States is 6 feet, 7 inches tall.
Yeah.
The average male is 5 feet 9 inches tall, which is still kind of in the lower end of where this community of giants was discovered, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm walking out at slightly above that average height, and I feel like I'm shorter than most people. So, you know, that's just how it goes. But here, the big question really is, well, what gives? Is there some kind of comparison to the surrounding population or the people of the time? Or, I mean, it's like, it's tough because we don't have a lot of information to go on. We're talking about filling in really a time hole here, mm-hmm. right? A cultural time hole. So you don't have a ton of people to others to compare this to.
Right. So how do we explain this characterization of ancient giants? Here's the thing. The people in the surrounding communities were actually shorter. So while these mysterious giants might seem kind of unremarkable today, make no mistake, they were towering over their contemporaries in adjacent communities. If you saw a bunch of these folks running at you in your village, in your, you know, your area, you would freak out because they were huge. And, you know, hopefully they're in a good mood.
Yeah. And the assumption there is, wow, they must be stronger than me. They at least have probably more weight on me.
And you definitely know, reach.
Yeah. You know, oh, yeah.
Boxing rules.
Well, yeah. But, you know, with a weapon or whatever you're dealing with at that time. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. We don't have extremely great numbers on the average height of the people in the surrounding communities. But we do know the average height of Europeans at the same time. And that is around 5 feet, 5 inches, or 1.67 meters. So that's a full, that would be a full foot, a foot and an inch above if you're talking about the 6'6 individual there.
So the people in this culture, in this community, were on average going to be much taller.
Mm-hmm.
So we can also take the example of Confucius, perhaps one of the most famous proven factual historical figures from this region. Confucius was around 551 to 479 BCE. He was described anywhere from about 1.9 meters tall, which is, you know, six-ish feet tall, right?
Mm-hmm.
To other accounts that have have him 9 feet and 6 inches tall?
Yeah. We have an excerpt from a book called Confucius, His Life and Thought. And in here, we're just going to describe the – I'm just going to give you a quote here. And it says, according to the historical records, Confucius was 9 feet, 6 inches tall, a height which seems to have been regarded as quite unusual. The measures the measures of length of the Han Dynasty were shorter than those now in use. The height of a normal adult was about 7 feet, that of a tall person, 8 feet. Thus, a height of 9 feet, 6 inches indicated something of a giant. And that certainly would. But if you changed it over, I guess you'd be reducing by about 2 feet there.
So then we have another issue with classification. We can't just accept the assumption that what we call a foot meant the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Same way we can't really accept what a giant was. So while these people would certainly have been intimidating, they were not, as far as we know, 10 feet tall in the way that we today understand feet. That's going to sound so weird out of context. We today understand the way that we mm-hmm. today understand feet. Hashtag no Tarantino or whatever that creepy guy from all the Nickelodeon shows. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Creepy guy from all the Nickelodeon shows?
There is a long-standing series of frankly troubling rumors about a very successful showrunner for Nickelodeon named Dan Schneider. And the allegations are that he has a weird foot thing that makes its way onto the air.
I have heard about that.
And these are, you know, these are child actors.
Oh.
And I haven't done a lot of digging into this.
And he's tall?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I haven't dug into this. Then, of course, you know, there's a difference between the court of public opinion and internet rumor and then an actual court or investigation. But we'll look into it. Let's get back to the way more comfortable version of feet we're talking about here.
Thank you.
Yeah. So there's one other question. It's one we don't have a definitive answer to. What made these people so tall, right? Why were they literally head and shoulders over the adjacent communities, right? Researchers theorize that at least the men in the community grew to these comparatively soaring heights because they were high-status individuals who had access to better food than most of their contemporaries. If you want to see a real-life version of this at play now while you are alive, check out the height comparisons between people born on the Korean Peninsula before maybe like some of the 80s babies who would have been developing during the famines of the 90s, of the 1990s. Mm-hmm. They have, because of malnutrition, this population that's genetically homogenous has discernible, easily visible differences in average height.
Wow.
So maybe it was the food. We know that the nature of the burials suggests that these people, these occupants, these giants were wealthy. And then it also suggests that there was some grave robbery, grave cases of grave robbery, because pottery and artifacts that have been found within the tombs were sometimes not even stolen, just deliberately broken. Someone came in and just smashed it.
Mm.
So there is a story there that's as of yet unwritten.
Maybe it's a revolt of some kind.
Yeah, yeah. Again, like the Sitekai, you know? So this is one of the weirdest parts about this. These giants are still around. Sort of. The people living in Shandong now still consider their height to be a defining attribute of their region and their communities. And weirdly enough, this belief appears to be true. It appears to be confirmed.
Yeah, in 2015, the average height of men aged 18 in Shandong was 1.753 meters or around 5'8", 5'7", something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
With a national average of around 1.72 meters. So again, it's like there were real giants, but we just kind of explained away like any kind of supernatural reasoning behind them.
Right. We don't have a solid, again, 100% proof. It's very difficult to try to guesstimate those causes 5,000 years ago, but it does appear there were real giants. It's just, you know, as we said, a giant back then wasn't the same thing. Like usually, and we can't speak for everyone, but usually nowadays when we think of giants, we're like 10 feet as a minimum giant.
Yeah. But I think that's just our version of something that would be unbelievable for it to be naturally occurring, right? Just 10 feet is so beyond what we've observed that you just go, wow, yeah, that's definitely – something else is going on here. That's just not some kind of genetic combination that just happened to get 10 feet.
We should also point out, yeah, really good point, that these people were healthy and normal. They did not seem to be suffering from the genetic condition that affected Wadlow. They didn't suffer from gigantism. It reminds me of – so I was in the city of London – a while back, you remember this, and I saw the Tower of London.
Yeah.
And I felt a little nonplussed, and I had to remember, I was like, at the time this was built, first, towers were much more difficult to construct, and of course, it wouldn't be as tall in comparison as, say, the London Bridge, or as tall as, you know, multiple other buildings in the area now. You have to put yourself back in that mindset. So back then, a tower, it was like the Tower of London was – it's huge. And I'm not denigrating it. It's a historically significant building. It's just I don't know what I was expecting. You know, as a kid, All I heard about was there was a tower, there were ravens, there's special guards called beef eaters. And you get there and you're like, oh, okay, this is a very, very old building, especially for us Yankees. And, you know, towers were different. So it's kind of the same thing. Giants were different in this part of the world.
I totally see it.
Unless, okay, here's the thing. Unless, Matt, there really is some sort of overarching generational conspiracy to repress evidence of actual giants, in which case the discovery of these suppressed remains would be without a doubt one of the largest exposés in human history. Okay, Matt's crossing his arms because you know you're about to get like a story, right? I'll keep it short, but here's my argument. So we know that stuff disappears. I really appreciate your earlier point about how difficult it is to find things, especially organic matter, because Earth is alive. It's hungry.
Yeah.
You know, like not only have we discovered in the course of the show that there are genuine lost cities and civilizations, but we also discovered that many of those things are going to be lost to history. Especially in depending on the environment or biome they're in, like if you have a lost civilization in a jungle, man, jungles eat human things, and they do it very quickly.
Yeah, and all of the things that humans create—that's really what you're saying. But yeah, it's not just the human; it's all the stuff that they put together, and they thought, "Oh, this is going to be great and last forever." No.
So then, it is possible that there could have been an isolated population of even larger things, sentient hominins of some sort. And maybe, again, there's a lot of ifs here. And maybe, let's say they were in a very aggressive biome like that. They were in a jungle or something. And then the earth ate them between the time that they expired and the time our versions of people came along.
It is possible. And if you don't think it's possible, talk to us. Tell us why, because we really feel like it's possible because of just the evidence we've seen has been just outlined there. In our research, that stuff happens, that the hungry nature of nature, it is very, very true. So let us know, please. Find us, as we mentioned earlier, on Twitter. Reach out to us. We're Conspiracy Stuff. We're also Conspiracy Stuff on Facebook. You can find our Facebook group with some of the coolest human beings out there on the internet. Our group is called Here's Where It Gets Crazy. You can give us suggestions. You can talk about this episode or another episode or suggest a new episode. Mm-hmm. Whatever you want to do, it is your sandbox controlled by Facebook. Ultimately.
Right.
But it's still cool.
Okay. So what if you're off the grid, you know, and you don't want to mess around with Facebook. You've evolved past social media.
Yes, but you still have a flip phone. Well, we have good news. We have a phone number 1-833-STDWYTK. Give us a call. Leave us a message. Be like this person who called us on Saturday.
Hey guys, I was just listening to your thing on the census, and you said something about how many people it would take to count the homeless in one day, and I wanted to give you just a little bit of an idea. I live in a city of about 12,000, and it's a tourist town, so we have oftentimes have a lot more people than that coming in, but when we went to count the census, it was all volunteers except for like maybe two people that were actually getting paid for it. And everyone else was volunteers, and there were about 40 of us for a city of 12,000. So, yeah, you do the math. Hey, y'all take care. Thank you very much. Bye.
Wow. First off, I didn't know how many people were volunteering.
Yeah, that's quite a bit to get 40 people to go out there and try and do the census. As we've discussed, it is not the safest temporary position to have.
Yeah, not all the time. No, thank you for your putting in your civic duty. You know,
yeah.
And Thank you additionally to everybody who's written in with conversation about the census. One thing that always, I don't know about you, Matt, but one thing that always impresses me about our fellow listeners is that we have people who are, even if they disagree with each other online, they're walking through each other's perspectives. You know what I mean? And that's that kind of discourse is something that I think I'm not saying we're great, but our listeners are exercising the kind of discourse that I would like to see happen in paid media pundits. You know what I mean?
Ooh, yeah, for sure.
Like maybe if a story is big, if it's a big story on the news, is a global event, I don't know, maybe push the commercial off. Maybe spend more than 6 minutes on it.
I'm right there with you, Ben.
Oh, God. Next headline, old man shouts at sky, shakes fist, curses sun. Well, that's our show. What do you think? And if you have anything on your mind and you say, okay, and I don't want to use a phone, I don't want to use social media, but I have something important and my fellow listeners need to know that, we have good news for you. You can always find us at our good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.